Until now, it's been good morning, gentlemen, and good morning, ladies. I must tell you that when this program started, the beginning of this academic year and here in Yeshiva University, I never expected the tremendous success that this program has proved to be. And of course, credit is due to the Yeshiva administration, starting with Mr. Richard Joel, the president of Yeshiva University, continuing through the hierarchy, if I use that term, going down to the Division of Communal Services. I like to take pride in my two Talmidim, Rabbi Levi Mostavsky and Rabbi Rav Shor, who have connoted in this program. I think they deserve a round of applause. Yesterday I had the privilege of Mr. Joel, who's a Riverdale resident, coming to speak in our shul. And his opening line was, "Thank you very much for the warm welcome." And after a moment of pause, "a very warm welcome." I repeat, the same kind of warm welcome, lack of air conditioning we have here as we had there. Please bear with us. Maybe the powers that be can turn a switch. The topic for today is the mitzvah of Talmud Torah for men and women. What an appropriate topic for a final in a series of shiurim, both for men and for women. Let me begin with a background, which you will not find in the source books. The background is, well, actually, let's look at source 7. We'll go backwards. Source 7 is an excellent point of departure for today's shiur. It's a passage from the Babylonian Talmud, Talmud Bavli, Meseches Kiddushin, Daf Chof Tes Amud Beis. L'lamdo Torah Minolon. From whence do we derive that a father is obligated to teach his son Torah? Tichsiv, L'imadetem Osam Es Benechem, a pasuk in Kriyat Shema. A father is required to teach his son Torah. Okay, what about a mother? Ihi means the second line. Ihi minolon delo mechayva. How do we know that she's not obligated to teach her son Torah? Tichsiv v'limadtem ulimadtem. Kol she mitzuva lilmod mitzuva lelamed. Kol she ne mitzuva lilmod ne mitzuva lelamed. Since a woman is exempt from learning, she's exempt from teaching. Asks the Gemara the obvious question. V'ihi minolon delo mechayva lemelef nafsha. How do we know that a woman is not obligated to learn on her own? Tichsiv v'limadtem v'limadtem. Ulamatem. Kol she'acher mitzuvah l'lamdo, mitzuvah l'lamed es atzmo. V'chol she'en acher mitzuvah l'lamdo, ein mitzuvah l'lamed es atzmo. Whoever others are obligated to teach must learn by himself. And whoever others are not obligated to teach need not learn by herself. U'minayin she'en acher mitzuvah l'lamdo. We keep begging the question. What's the bottom line? Amakra v'limadetem osim spenechem. Velo binosechem. So it's a triple tier. First it begins that a father was not obligated to teach his daughter. From there we derive that a daughter is not obligated to teach herself. From there we derive that the mother is not obligated to teach her son. So it's a triple derivation. This is the number 7 in your source books. I want to begin by explaining that this is not as simple as meets the eye. By looking at this, one might think that a woman has absolutely no obligation to study Torah whatsoever. Nothing could be further from the truth. The Ramah and Yoredeya, in the laws of Talmud Torah, explains to us that a woman is required to study Torah so that she knows how to conduct a proper Jewish life. This means that all relevant halachos, she is absolutely required to study. And I may tell you that a person, man or woman, can spend an entire lifetime and not complete this difficult assignment of studying the halachos which are required to know. What then is she exempt from? She is exempt from, how should we say, the obligation to study Torah constantly. V'hagisa bo yomam v'layla. The obligation to study even the parts of the Torah which are theoretical, which do not have practical application. This a woman is exempt from. However, to study the Torah which is practical, this is an obligation incumbent upon a woman as well as upon a man, as the Ramah quotes specifically in Yoredeya, in Hilchos Talmud Torah. Let me add to this that I believe, without a doubt, that a woman is obligated to study the basics of what we'll call in our language today, Hashkafa, Emuna. Can you say that a woman will say, they'll ask a woman, who's Avraham Avinu? I don't know, I'm exempt from Talmud Torah. Sounds absurd to us intuitively. Because if she doesn't know who Avraham Avinu is, that's not a person who's part of the Mesorah. As a matter of fact, my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, Zichron Levracha, often commented that there's another pasuk in the Chumash, V'hodatan levonecha v'levnei vonecha, that there's an obligation to teach one's children and children's children. In this context, the pasuk in Parshas V'aschanan, there is no drushas chazal limiting it to men and excluding women. Hence, it applies both in the teaching end and the learning end to men and women equally. And what is the next verse? Yom asher amad lefnei Hashem Elokecha b'chorev. The day when we stood at Har Sinai, the day we received the Torah. And it's not just the Torah itself. This is just of course, that's the most important of all the experiences of Klal Yisrael. But this is paradigmatic of the general obligation on fathers and mothers to teach sons and daughters and grandsons and granddaughters. This Mesorah, this tradition, which is fundamentally ours. So therefore, if I may summarize, there are three parts to Talmud Torah. There is the practical, there is the conceptual, the ideas of the basics of Torah, Emunah, Hashkafa, and then there is the vastness of Torah, which never ends, the entire corpus of the Talmud, even that which is impractical. Women are obligated as men in the first two, learning and teaching, and they're exempt from the third, both learning and teaching as well as being taught. This is an introduction to this entire topic of the obligation of men and women in Talmud Torah. This is not the topic for today, but I feel it's important we mention briefly the fact that the Talmud in Masechta Sota counsels against women studying Torah, particularly Torah Sheba'al Peh. As it is codified in the Rambam and in the Shulchan Aruch, a man should not teach his daughter Torah, neither Torah Shebichsav nor Torah Sheba'al Peh. However, Torah Shebichsav, although it's advised not to do it, it's not too bad. Whereas Torah Sheba'al Peh, writes the Rambam in the Shulchan Aruch, is Ki'ilu Malam D'Tiflus, is considered to be a negative. Have no fear. I believe that this request, if you will, as the Rambam calls it, Tzivu Chachamim, the rabbis implored or commanded us, is not an absolute halacha, and therefore it is, to my mind at least, it is subject to change. The Torah itself is immutable, never changes. The exemption of Talmud Torah, we believe, never changes. The advisability, however, can certainly change. And don't take it from me, but take it from the Chafetz Chaim himself, in his famous Sefer Likutei Halachos on the Masechta Sota, as well as in his very, very enthusiastic support for the beginnings of the Beis Yaakov movement, the Chafetz Chaim explains to us that times have changed. That in the olden days, the women would grow up in their parents' home, they were illiterate, and they would go straight from their parents' lap to their husband's lap, and that was it. Now that they're getting married much later, and they actually learn how to read and write, that's what the Chafetz Chaim says, come a long way. To read and write, he wrote this 100 years ago. They learn how to read and write, we have to, less than that, we have to teach them to study Torah. He's talking there about Torah Shebichsav, about the basics of Musa Svarim, etc. To which my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik added, I believe it's conceptually congruous, that if the women today are studying for advanced degrees in universities throughout the country, how much more so is important for us to teach them Torah on an even higher level. And as was well known, the Rav felt that even the, not only was the inadvisability of teaching Torah Shebichsav, which was couched in more gentle terms, no longer applicable nowadays, he felt even the more pronounced inadvisability of teaching Torah Shebapeh is perhaps not applicable nowadays, that women are on such a high level of advanced secular education. Again, not for today, one can argue back and forth on the realities that have descended upon our world since the time of the Rav's pronouncements and positions, and even since his becoming inactive, which is now a story of 20 years. But we will not go into that now. Suffice it to say that to claim that it's prohibited for a woman to study Talmud Torah, Torah Shebichsav, is to prohibit the study of Chumash. There's only one movement in Orthodox, to my knowledge, that does that. That's the Satmar movement. They, to this day, will not study Chumash because it says in the Shulchan Aruch, you're not to study Chumash. You shouldn't teach them Chumash. They learn Sanarana, whatever they're learning. So you may say, what about the world of yeshivas? It's not Satmar, but they certainly would assume that one may not teach Torah Shabbat Peh. Wrong again, because all Beis Yaakov, to my knowledge, teach Chumash and Rashi, including Parshat Mishpatim. And Parshat Mishpatim is simply Babakama, 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 Babakama. It's just Xerox, like this. That's what it is. It's Xerox to put in a piece of paper known as Chumash and Rashi. If it's prohibited, it's prohibited. If it's permissible, it's permissible. So I believe that in essence, everyone agrees, from our world, I should say, anywhere from between here and Satna, that it's permissible for women to study Torah Shabbat Peh, witness the fact that they're studying Chumash and Rashi. Nonetheless, the equation of women's education to that of a man is something which I believe is not advisable even in 2005. There are priorities, and the fact that a woman is obligated to study halacha and is not obligated to study the Talmudic discourse is itself a reason to emphasize the halachic aspect more for men than for women, even with respect to the more for women than for men. Even for the men is a problem that they're spending too much time on the Talmud, not enough time on halachic matters. This is something my Rabbi Shechter Shalita has been spoken about so many times, for men's education as well as for women's education. So therefore, the idea of at least to my mind, of the equation of women's education with men's, which has been called for by certain individuals, including principals in our own community, I believe is ill-advised, even in our time. Within that range, assuming they're going to learn Chumash and Rashi, and their education will not be identical to that of a man, so then we can start agreeing or disagreeing on the details. Should they all study Gemara? Should some study Gemara? I don't believe at the topic we should go into at great length now. I believe reasonable people can disagree on this matter. I feel that that's the range where the disagreement should take place. Not that I, Chalila v'chas, don't respect the opinions of Satmar on the one hand, and we'll call the egalitarians on the other hand. They all have kula mahuvim. But from my perspective, the range is shorter, it's smaller than that. We would certainly permit Chumash and Rashi. We would certainly not advocate absolute equation of women's and men's education. And within that range, I believe there's room for a lot of room for honest disagreement. I have my own opinions, but we'll leave that for perhaps a different occasion. Okay, this is my general introduction to this very important topic of Talmud Torah for men and for women. I hope that I'm making myself clear. If there are questions, I believe it would be appropriate to save it to the end, and if time will allow, I'll be happy to take as many questions as you have. Having given this introduction, I'd like to move on to analyze a very interesting halachic topic based upon this introduction. I'd like to begin now at footnote number one. Yesh Omrin. There are some who say, Mi shenase b'no bar mitzvah. When the son becomes bar mitzvah, turns 13, Yivarech, Baruch ato Hashem, Elokeinu melech olam, Sheptorani me'oncho shel zeh. A bracha which is found in the Ramah, in the Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim. Says the Ramah, v'tov levarech b'lo shemu malchus. It's a matter of dispute. Sofek brachos lahakel. One should say this bracha without the name of Hashem. It's traditionally found in most of Durham, Baruch Sheftarani me'oncho shel zeh. The reason why we do not say it with shemu malchus is because the source is not in the Talmud. The source is the Medrash Rabbah. The Medrash Rabbah, let's read the Medrash right away. We'll skip to number 3 to see the source immediately. Vayigdalu hana'arim. An example is given to two different types of vegetation, a myrtle and a thorn bush, who grow near each other. At the beginning, you can't tell what's what. After they get bigger, you can tell the difference between the thorn bush, which is negative, and the myrtle bush, which is positive. One gives beautiful smell, and one gives thorns. So too, third kol yud gimel shanim. Shana, shneim holchim debeis ha-sefer. Shneim bami beis ha-sefer. Yaakov and Esau. Nachal yud gimel shanim, they turn 13. Zei olach lebatei midrashis. So Yaakov went to the Beis Medrash. Zei olach, Esau went. Lebatei ovdei kochavim to church. Amar Rabbi Elazar, based on this, Sarech Adam li papel debino. Ad yud gimel shanim. A man must take care of his son for 13 years. Mikan ve'elech tzarech sheyomar baruch sheftarani me'onsho shozeh. This is the only source in early Torah literature for this brach. The word baruch atah Hashem elokeinu melech olam not found. The Vilna Gaon says they're never found. Of course, it's understood to make it with the Shem Malchus. But the Ramah said it's not in the Gemara, and the Medrash doesn't say Shem Hashem explicitly. Better to not take any chances. We'll say the bracha without Hashem's name, which is the general practice in our community. Okay. So we first have to analyze the two classical understandings of this expression, the Me'oncho Shozeh. And we'll look back in the second part of source number two. Me'oncho Shozeh. Pirish. The Ad Achshav Nena Sha'av Kishachot HaBen B'Shvil Shalo Chanocha. Until now, the father would be punished if the son sinned, because he, the father, has not trained his son properly. So when the child turns 13, the father breathes a sigh of relief. Whew! Until now, I'd be punished for everything, every misdeed of my son. Now that he's 13, he's on his own. I can breathe a sigh of relief. I'm putter from the onshin that I would normally have incurred because of his misdeeds. And that's the basis for this bracha. This is how the Mogen Avraham understands. Uvelvush kirish ipcha. The levush, a previous source of Mordechai Yaffe, Talmud the Ramah, has exactly the opposite interpretation. What is the Levush's interpretation? The Ad Ata, until now, until the boy turns 13, Haben Nenash Bavon Ha'ov. The son can be punished for the sins of his father. That's a radical statement. Sounds like almost an unconventional. Yet, the source for the statement is no less than a Medrash Rabbah in Rus, cited by no less an authority than the Rambam. In Hilchos Tshuva, the Rambam quotes this. Yeah, he quotes it. It's really in Perek Vav Halacha Aleph. He quotes this. Quote, Bona v'aktanim ki kinyano hein. A person's children who are smaller, like as if they're considered his possessions. Uchsiv ish v'cheto yumas. No, I'm sorry. It's not in here. I apologize. It's Perek Vav in Hilchos Tshuva, Halacha Aleph. That's where the Rambam can be found. I'm sorry. Please look up all the sources that are not here, and I think you will find that I'm correct in my quotation. If I'm not, please let me know, or we'll email a correction. So therefore, we find, according to the Levush, since the child can be punished for his father's sins, it's a terrible thing. Can you imagine a guilt trip? Can you imagine parental guilt? My child was harmed because of my misdeed. It's a terrible thought. Once the father turns 13, that thought no longer goes through his mind, because now the son is considered independent. He will not be punished because of the misdeeds of the father. And as a result, we say that the father makes a bracha, baruch sheftarani, moshe shozeh. So it's opposite the Mogen Avraham's trap and the Levush's trap. An obvious question arises, which is I want to speak about. I will not go into every one of the technicalities because of time considerations, but still it's a remarkable dissertation, and unfortunately the computer doesn't generate this, so it's not on your source, but you can look it up in a super commentary on the Mogen Avraham here. It's called the Pre-Megadim, very famous, perhaps the most famous of the super commentaries, the Pre-Megadim. He asked the obvious question, why is this limited to father and son? Why is a bracha recited only for a father, by a father, for a son? Why not a mother for a son? Why not a father for a daughter? Why not a mother for a daughter? Don't the reasons of both the Mogen Avraham and Levush apply equally for men and women on either side? That is a very significant question. I wonder if you ever thought about that. Why is it that when a girl turns bas mitzvah, her parents don't say, Baruch Shev Tarani Me'ancho Shel Zos? Or if a boy turns bar mitzvah, why does his mother say, Baruch Shev Tarani Me'ancho Shel Zos? These are very fundamental questions. And frankly, I must tell you, the answers of the Prima Gadim don't resonate. I'll use that expression. I'll give you some of his technical answers that he discusses this, in this context. He says as follows. According to the Magen Avraham, that the father says that he's grateful, he will no longer be punished for the sins of his son, what about the daughter? Suggests the Prima Gadim that there are those who maintain that a father is not responsible for the chinuch of a daughter. Doesn't resonate with us. If those who want to look up the original source, again, it's not in here. It's in Magen Avraham, Simen Shin Mem Gimel, where this discussion takes place. And as you well know, our general assumption is that a man is in fact obligated to train his daughter in mitzvos. And therefore this answer of the Prima Gadim is not completely satisfactory. Even if, says the chinuch, a man is obligated to train his daughters in the mitzvah of chinuch, quote, Ein bo kol kach mitzvot shemechuyev lechancha bekatnusa. There are not as many mitzvos that a man is required to teach his daughter as compared to teaching his son. Well, obviously a man has some more mitzvos. And then he throws in the zinger. Catch this now. V'yemasiya le'ish bekatnusa kinyan isha havya v'ein nensha b'shvil aviya. If she marries before the age of 12, so then it's already the husband's situation, no longer the father's. So in that kind of a case, the reasons of the Baruch Shem probably don't apply. Now, in the Prima Gadim's day, no girl was getting married before 12. He's just defending the original Midrashic source, which is in the time when there was a potential for marriage, Kiddushei Ketana, one of the recent scandals in our community, that was considered an accepted practice. And as a result, This answer has some merit. The truth is, what if she doesn't get married before the age of 12? It's difficult to assume that they cancel the entire bracha just because of the rather unusual case, even in their days, of this early marriage. So again, we are in trouble. We're in trouble. There are a number of other technicalities which I'm not going to go into now, concerning the mother with respect to her son turning bar mitzvah. Again, the question is the other way. Just as there's a question whether a father is obligated in the chinuch of his daughter, so too is a question whether a mother is obligated in the chinuch of her son. If not, then according to the Magen Avraham, there's no problem. However, once again, it's generally assumed that a mother is obligated in the chinuch of her son, and as a result, the Prima Gadim's answers give us pause. Give us pause. Even with respect to the Levush's definition, that a child can be punished because of the sins of the father, the Prima Gadim suggests it only applies to sons, not to daughters, because the pasuk which the Rambam cites in Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Vav, is Ish Bechet Ol Yumasu. Kishahu Ish, and that when he is a Kata. So the Prima Gadim says, oh, Ish is Lashon Zachar. It only refers to a man and not to a woman. So therefore the mother is exempt. Two problems. There's no drasha. Generally speaking, we only have the Chazal Darshan that they exclude women. And number two, if anything, that excludes a daughter, not a mother. Because the one who's Khalil Kadai is not the parent. Ish Bechet Lo Yumasu. It's a question which one it would exclude. Therefore, to sum up and to save time, the Prima Gadim asks in effect three questions. Why not a father for a daughter, a mother for a son, and a mother for a daughter? Why is there no Baruch Shev Tarani? Both according to the Pshat of the Magen Avraham that says Baruch Shev Tarani means that I'm happy that I will no longer be punished for my child's indiscretions. And according to the opinion of the Levush, I'm happy that my child will no longer be punished for my indiscretions. This should be gender neutral. The Prima Gadim's answers in sum leave us somehow unsatisfied. They don't resonate for us, and they're, even technically speaking, highly problematic. In order to answer this, therefore, very powerful question, I'd like to pose a third interpretation, different than Magen Avraham and different than Lavush, which goes to the very heart of our earlier discussion of the obligation of men and women in Talmud Torah. I believe that one has to understand Baruch Shem Tirani in the context from which it emerges. We already read source number 3, the Medrash. What is the Medrash talking about? Batei Midrashos. Batei Midrashos means that Yaakov Avinu went to the Beis Medrash. Until 13, his father Yitzchak took him to the Beis Medrash. After 13, he's required to go to the Beis Medrash on his own. That's what it says in the Medrash Rabbah. May I therefore suggest a new interpretation, which has an echo in the Parish of the Radal, which is printed on the bottom of the classical Medrash Rabbah here in Parshas Tovos. And that is, based upon the Rambam, should be here. Uh-oh. This is, I think, was supposed to be on, but it's not here. So I'm sorry. I'll read the Rambam, therefore, at the very beginning of Hilchos Talmud Torah. I don't believe it's here. This is what the Rambam says. Quote, Perek Aleph Halacha, the opening words. Quote, Noshim v'avodim uktanim peturim mitalmud Torah. That's how he starts, with an exemption. Strange way to start, with the exception rather than the rule. Avol katan aviv chayav lulamdo Torah. Shenemar v'limadtem osim espenechem. Starts with the exemption, then it gives you the rule. Very strange way for a master wordsmith known as Rav Moshe ben Maimon, the Rambam. If you try this in your English composition course, they would give you a minus something for this. You don't start with an exception, you start with a rule. Rambam should have said, it's an obligation to teach Torah, but there's an exception. Noshim avodim uktanim, everyone's supposed to learn except for them. Why is that the exception? I think it's a very good question. Moreover, Rambam's expression is, Aval katan aviv chayav lelamdo Torah. Only a katan. We know what that means, only until bar mitzvah. Why is it limited to a katan? A second powerful question. I believe that these two questions answer each other. The Rambam is basing himself on a logical point. Namely, if someone has an independent obligation, it's inconceivable that there be superimposed an obligation upon someone else to satisfy that obligation. And therefore, conceptually, the only way we can imagine an obligation for a father to teach a son is if he first established that the son himself is exempt. Had the son been obligated, the father would not have been. Hence, paradoxically, the Rambam begins Hilchos Talmud Torah with an exemption. And he begins once again, Noshim v'avodim uktanim peturim mitalmud Torah. Now that we've established that a katan under bar mitzvah is exempt from Talmud Torah, we can now say, okay, the katan is exempt, but the father is obligated to teach that katan. And what emerges? Once the boy turns 13, the obligation ceases to exist. Only katan is the father's obligated to teach, because once he turns 13, he has his own obligation, which pushes aside, if you will, the obligation of the father. I want to go back to the very beginning of the shiur. Do you think for a moment that a father, once his son turns 13, can let the son run hefka and say you don't have to go to school anymore and you're going to be a vildachaya? I mean, someone could read the Rambam that way. Chas v'shalom. Just as we spoke about earlier, a father is obligated, and a mother is obligated for that matter, to teach a daughter Torah. What kind of Torah? The practical Torah of keeping the halachas, the hashkafas and the munas ha-Torah. These are not sourced in v'limadatem osim espenechem. They come from other sources. Ulamadatem osam ushmartam nasosam. Study is a prerequisite for practice. Godol tamat shemevili de masa. Vodatam levanecha v'levnei vanecha. As we said earlier, giving over the experiential, giving over the traditions of faith and of the philosophy of the Torah. This is gender blind, applies to fathers and to mothers and to sons and to daughters, even to grandchildren. And yes, there's no age limit. If the father is 90 and the son is 60, the father is obligated to continue to give over the Mesorah with every fiber and strength in his body, as long as he lives. One more time a Seder, one more time to Daven Yom Kippur. Give that child and grandchild, maybe even a great-grandchild, an extra ounce of spiritual fortitude that is so necessary. That obligation exists forever. My whole point, that's why we had the long introduction, is that there's a distinction between the generality, which you just described, and the particular technical obligation of a limadatem osim es b'neichem. You mentioned earlier, b'neichem v'lo b'noseichem. Technically, it does not apply to women on three different levels. Father need not teach daughter, daughter need not teach herself, and therefore mother need not teach son. As we start, footnote number, source number 7, quoted from the Gemara Masechet Kiddushin. That's all within the technicality of a limadatem osim es b'neichem. Well, the truth is, when a boy turns 13, I don't want to say he becomes a girl, that would not sound right today, but for all intents and purposes, that's what happens. He's also, there's again no longer any obligation of a limadatem osim es b'neichem. Nonetheless, what remains is the son should learn the practicalities of Torah, the son should learn the hashkafa and the emunah of Torah, and again, it has to be a mensch. This is something which is applies to men and to women of all ages. And it's included in the parents' obligation and responsibility with respect to their children of both genders and of all ages. This being the case, let's go back to the bracha. Baruch Shepterani. It comes from the mitzvah of Limadatem Osim Es B'neichem. A technical mitzvah, which starts when a boy is born and ends, or when he's early able to understand, and ends when he turns 13. And when he turns 13, the father says, Baruch Sheptarani Me'onshel Shozeh. Until now, I had a responsibility to discharge this technical obligation of a limadatem osmas b'nechem. Now I no longer have that responsibility. And of course we know that responsibilities are not just fun and games. They could bring with them punishments. If a father fails to fulfill the limadatem osmas b'nechem properly, he chas v'shalom could be punished. So Baruch Sheptarani Me'onshel Shozeh means I have faithfully, I hope, discharged this obligation of Limadatem Osim Es B'neichem. My boy turned 13, I finished it, I make a bracha that I'm no longer going to be punished for failure to fulfill this obligation. But you betcha, if the father will not fulfill Vodatem Levanecha Levanei Vanecha, and will not fulfill Limadatem Osim Eshmatel Masosim with respect to his child, he will be punished for a different reason. But, you know, we take what we can get. Right now he's turned 13, I'm exempted at least from that punishment, not our responsibility. That's my understanding. Of course, if I'm right, all the prima gaudens questions vanish. Like this. He asked, what about a father and a daughter and a mother and a daughter and a mother and a son? But if it's based on a limadatem osmas b'nechem, this applies only to what? To a father-son relationship. Hence, we understand clearly why it is that it's limited to a father and a son. If this is the case, we understand full well why customarily this bracha of Baruch Shepterani is recited by a father when the son, the bar mitzvah boy, receives his first aliyah. Why? It could be 2 days after he turned 13. Maybe even more. Why? I believe the answer is very clear. Traditionally, receiving an aliyah meant that the person who received the aliyah read from the Sefer Torah. And the bar mitzvah often happens even to this day. He reads from the Sefer Torah upon his bar mitzvah. This indicates that he's capable of reading a Torah script. He's conversant with what we'll call in our language Torah Shebichtav. Do you know that Limadatem Osim Es B'neichem is limited to Torah Shebichtav? It does not apply to Torah Shebaal Peh. So that's what emerged in the Gemara Masechet Kiddushin. So therefore, the father till 13 is obligated to see to it that his son masters Torah Shebichtav. And what demonstrates to both the father and the son and the entire community, the entire world, that the father has been successful in giving this skill and talent to his son? The fact that the son opens up a Sefer Torah is able to read. Unfortunately, in the world around us, the general Jewish population, open a Sefer Torah for all Jewish boys born of Jewish mothers, age 13, in the United States of America. I don't want to tell you what percentage will be able to read it. So the fact that the father succeeded at least that far indicates that he's been successful up to that point, and that's the perfect time to say the bracha of Baruch Sheftarani Me'oncho Shel Zeh. Okay, just to review so far, we began with a general introduction to the obligation of women in Talmud Torah. We divided the three parts. Two, they're obligated. The third, they're not. We mentioned the fact that nowadays things have changed, both in terms of Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaalpeh. We spoke about the various ranges, the Satmar on one end and the egalitarians on the other end, and we believe that the middle is appropriate, and we can disagree about where within that range every parent and every school should conduct themselves. And then we started discussing the issue of Baruch Sheftarani, the two pshatim of Magen Avraham and the Levush, the questions of the Prima Gadim, and my own pshat, the third pshat, nothing to do with my general obligation of chinuch, nor my being punished for my son's indiscretions, or him being punished for mine, but rather it's a purely question of Talmud Torah, the context of the Medrash Rabbah, and therefore it's limited to father and son. We will discuss one more topic before coming to a conclusion. This I'm paying off a debt that I incurred yesterday in shul. We had a bas mitzvah celebration. And the question is, how does the halacha view bas mitzvah? This is a point of great contention in our world. Again, only in our world. And Satmar hasn't gotten onto their radar screen. I don't know if they have radar screens, but it hasn't gotten there yet. But in our world, it's very much a matter of discussion. Well, what is it? So I want to read to you a number of contemporary sources. Again, time isn't allowed to go through everything, just to indicate how there can be polarized opposites. Let's take a look. Number four, Moshe, Igros Moshe. Hachafetzim lahanek seder v'simcha b'bonos k'shenasas b'nos mitzvah ein lasas eber beisak nes b'shum ofa aflo b'layla. And the ceremony is bas mitzvah, is divrei reshus, and it's coming from the reform and the conservative. He wants to do it in the house. Okay, he wants to, he can do it. But it's not called the sudas mitzvah, it's not called the dvar mitzvah. It's a birthday. Yom let us be alma. If it were up to me, Sir Moshe, I'd be mevatel the whole thing. Not only that, even bar mitzvah we should cut out. Oh, that's for now. That's, leave it out. So Rav Moshe is clear and unequivocal about bas mitzvah is nothing more than a birthday party. Number five, someone asked Rav Moshe, what is this? What is this? After all, a daughter as well as a son becomes obligated in mitzvahs. So what? Why shouldn't there be a bas mitzvah? That's a very good question. Second paragraph, just to save time. You can't tell. A son you can tell. Counts for a minion, he puts on tefillin. A daughter you can't tell. You look around the shul, who's bas mitzvah, who's not. You can't tell. Therefore, there's no party. I would have said the other way around. If you can't tell, you have to make a party. I thought you can tell. I mean, my modernism is creeping in here. That's what Moshe said. The exact opposite and polar opposite approach is found in the Yichaveh Das of Avadah. That's source number six. But before we get to source number six, may I ask you for a moment to go all the way back to what we'll call source 2A. Source 2A is Bar Mitzvah. He quotes what he called Likutin, that means the Zohar. Shemitzvah al ha'adam lasos se'uda. Line touch the word se'uda. B'yom shenasa b'no bar mitzvah, ki yom shenichnas lachupa. Wow! We complain about the elegant catering at bar mitzvahs. Don't complain. It should be like a wedding. We should complain about the weddings. All right, that's true. But once you have a wedding, he says it should be like a wedding. That's what the Rebbe Magen Avraham says. Wow. Wow. Now, Uv Yud Shin Shin is Yam Shel Shlomo Perek Zayin de Baba Kama says that if the boy darshins, it's a Sudas Mitzvah, even if it's not Ba'oso Yom. It's not on the very day of his turning 13. What's implicit in this Yam Shel Shlomo written by the Maharshal is that the reason for a Suda Bar Mitzvah is not the Drosha. That's the side point. The real reason is based on the Gemara which Rabbi Avadja quotes in source number 6. Let's take a look. Final source. A girl turns 12. How do we, should we celebrate it? Etc. Tshuva. Meseches Kiddushin of Lamed Aleph Amen Aleph. I'm Rav Yosef. Meireish Hava Amina Manda Hava Amali Halacha Karebi Yehuda. Yama Suma Potam and Amitzvahs. Avina Yama Tawala Rabbona. Rav Yosef unfortunately was blind. And at first he thought, if someone told him he's exempt from mitzvahs, to make a party. Now look, I'm such a tzaddik, I'm not required to do mitzvahs, I do it anyway. Now that we learn, Godol Mitzvah V'Yosef. Yosef. Bibi Shena Mitzvah V'Yosef. It's greater to do mitzvahs when you're obligated. Adarabba. I'll make a party for all the rabbis, all the people, if someone tells them that I'm obligated. And then Rabbi Avadya quotes about the 12th line. The line touches the word Shlomo. Rabbi Shlomo Luyo, the Marashal, Yamshul Shlomo Bekama, we just saw. Shesu'udas v'chagigas bar mitzvah l'nar. Next line. Shemolu lo. Shloshes v'yishan av yomechad. Eilecha su'udas mitzvah gedol l'mizu. Shusu'udas hodol amokam baruchu. Al shazikes anar azel agiel l'mitzvahs. Shegolol mitzvah v'yoser. Nimishayena mitzvah v'yoser. Shafil v'ala v'sora b'lvali medach. What happened? Rav Yosef, nothing really changed. He just heard, was just informed that he's obligated. He made a big mesiva. How much more so when, in point of fact, you become obligated when you turn 13 and 12, respectively. And therefore, Rav Avadya Paskin, halacha lemaisa, to make a suda's bas mitzvah, basically the same as a bar mitzvah. He quotes in the last paragraph, Hagor of Moshe Feinstein, who disagrees. Unfortunately, the end of this is also not here. The bottom line of Rav Avadya is, there's no difference whatsoever. Identical. Bar and Bas Mitzvah are identical. And there are many people who do that. They have the same elegant catering for the Bar Mitzvah, for the Bas Mitzvah. Rav Moshe is just a birthday party, it's nothing. Once again, let me conclude the shiur with my own interpretation. Neither here nor there, that's the theme. My pshat was not the Morgan of Rome, not the Lavush, and here again, I'm not Rav Moshe and not Rav Avadya. I don't mean greatness, I'm very far. I mean, my pshat is not the pshat of either of the two Gedolei Hador, Zatzal and Shalita, that we just described. Let me tell you my interpretation. I have a new interpretation completely. If you go back to source 2a, just for one final moment, the Magen Avraham seems to quote two sources. He quotes the Likutim, which is the Zohar, and he quotes the Yamshul Shlomo, the Marashal. The assumption of Rabbi Avadya, as well as the assumption of the Machtis HaShekel, another super commentary on the Magen Avraham, is that these two are one and the same. The Zohar obligation of the father to make a major feast parallel to a wedding, on the one hand, and that which the Marashal said of Godol Mitzvah V'Yosa, are one and the same. Hence Rabbi Avadya says, whatever major feast you make for your son at Bar Mitzvah, you have to make for your daughter at Bas Mitzvah. It makes perfect sense if you make that assumption. I am here this morning to reject that assumption. And I believe that there are two separate and distinct obligations. One derived from the Zohar, and one derived from the Gemara, Baba Kama, and Kiddushin, cited by the Marashah. And I'll explain to you what it's based upon. You may recall, no, it's also not here. I don't know what happened to my sources. But it should have been a source in the Gemara and Kiddushin, that is a Tana Rabbanan, that a father is obligated with respect to a son to fulfill a number of important mitzvahs. Let me rattle them off quickly. What are they? Lemulo, Lefdoso, Lalamda Torah, La Siyawisho, Lalamda Umnus. Bris Mila, Pinyin Aben, Talmud Torah, marry him off and teach him a trade. Yes, we are in a Torah Umada institution. And all the tuition that you have paid to this institution is in fulfillment of your obligation of teaching him Torah and teaching him umnus. We all know, when a father is privileged to make a bris milah for a son, he makes a festive meal. A pidyon haben, a festive meal. A marriage, a festive meal. Every time a father is privileged to discharge one of these monumental obligations incumbent upon him, he makes a festive meal. Wouldn't it stand to reason that when he discharges the technical obligation of a limadat amos mispanechem, he should also make a festive meal? In my view, that's exactly what the Suda's Bar Mitzvah is. Just as he made a big Suda by the Bris and the Pidyon HaBen and by the Chasana, so too by the Bar Mitzvah. That's exactly the comparison of the Zohar. The father has succeeded in another milestone. Time to make a major celebration to thank Hashem in the presence of his, what do they say, 900 closest friends, and whatever it may be, in the presence of all those people that he's close with, to demonstrate his gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he's reached this milestone of discharging the obligation of Mila, Pidyon HaBen, wedding, and Talmud Torah, namely at the Suda of Bar Mitzvah. This is what I believe is the source for this major, major Suda described in the Zohar. I will prove to you that I'm right. From purely halachic context. There are more rights in Yoredeya that an Ovel is not permitted to go to a Sudas Mitzvah, to eat at a Sudas Mitzvah. One exception he gives, given on the side, is a Siyam Masechta. If you look more carefully on the side, in the Gilyan, in the Dogel Meravava, Sudas Bar Mitzvah, Dino Kesiyam Masechta. What's the connection? The answer is that a Bar Mitzvah is a Torah Suda, just like a Siyam. A Siyam Masechta means Reuven finished Masechta Baba Kama. What is the Bar Mitzvah? Shimon finished teaching his son Levi, the Torah Shebichsav. You know, by the time he turns 13, this boy is supposed to know Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim. Chatosi. None of my sons, I didn't teach any of my sons all of Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim until 13, and even the tuition I paid in these various schools, I don't think I'd achieve that in the schools in which I attend, which are wonderful schools. You know, they have a Yerushalayim school. It's called Zilberman. Bnei Brak, where they go back, what they call the Maral system, where they teach, they know the whole Torah of Yimuksulim by the time they're 13. So those parents fulfill it. We only fulfill part of it. But nonetheless, since he's 13, we've done what we can. Presumably at that point in time, the father has fulfilled his obligation, his responsibility, and that's it. He makes a big party like by a wedding, a bris, and a pidyon event. That's my interpretation. This has nothing whatsoever to do with the Marshal's construct of the Gemara Baba Kama Kiddushin with Golel Mitzvah V'Yosef. Not only that, but the obligation devolves upon different people. Who is obligated to make the major Suda when the wedding and the Talmud Torah and the Bris and the Pidyon event take place? The father. He's discharged his obligation. Who pays the bill? The father. That's why he invites his 900 closest friends. It's his party, quote unquote. Who is the one who is obligated when we talk about Golel HaMetzuvah V'Yosef? Who? Is it the father? The father's been obligated to miss this for a long time. Who is it? Anybody? Who is it? It's the son or the? Correct. The daughter. Rabbi Avadya is correct. In the context of Golel HaMetzuvah V'Yosef, there's no difference whatsoever between sons and daughters. That is correct. And therefore, just as the son is obligated to make a Suda, so is the daughter. But the second level, the level of the father's obligation that he discharged the tremendous chiyuv of v'limadat demosmos b'neichem, which is parallel to the obligation to marry off and to do a bris and pidyon haben, this doesn't apply to bas mitzvah. I'm sorry to say that if my analysis is correct, someone who's an avelis may not attend a bas mitzvah. It is a Sudas mitzvah, yes. But it's not for the obligation of the matter of Torah, and it therefore cannot be compared to a Siyum Masechta. So Rabbi Avadya's expression says as follows: Roy lochoges knisasa lemitzvos besuda v'hodah v'simcha kemesh v'bechina hazos ein kol hevdel v'nara lenara. Identical. It is identical, but it's only identical as far as the obligation of the child is concerned. As far as the obligation as a father, just as the Baruch Shem Torah which precedes it, which we discussed earlier, it is purely an expression of the fulfillment, the completion of the fulfillment of a limadatam osmas b'neichem ledaber. Therefore, what's my bottom line after all this about bas mitzvah? Is what I did with my own daughters. Bar mitzvah, I invited all the members of the shul, okay, we'll leave it out, and some talmidim and family, we came. It wasn't quite a wedding, but it was a catered event, and it took place locally in Riverdale. My daughter's bas mitzvahs, For my daughters, they were the party planners. It was totally up to them. So what do we do? And we have three wonderful daughters. Each one, there was a double. They got two mesivas. One was for their friends, which took place whether near the school or near the shul. And they do what 12-year-old girls like to do. They had some Israeli dancing or music. Last, we had a beautiful project to make dolls for cancer patients, which is really a proper way to celebrate Bat Mitzvah with Chesed. Some of my community is doing that exactly now, as today. I spoke about it in shul yesterday. What a beautiful idea this is. That's one. And we have an additional mesiba at my own table, in my own house, in my immediate family, however that's defined. And that was the second mesiba. All a celebration of my daughter's celebration of Godol Mitzvah V'Yosef. That applies equally to men and to women. However, with respect to the Limalta Moses Benechem, to go back to the very beginning of the Shir, that is something that is a technical exemption for women, which we cannot change. The Torah is immutable. I make one reference to Igros Moshe again, in Chelek Dalet, I believe it's Simon Memtes in the Arachayim, where he cautions against those who would like to, in the spirit of the times, somewhat obliterate the Torah's distinctions between men and women in this regard or similar ideas. Can't do it. Exemptions are exemptions. What's advisable, as we said before, can change. But absolute exemptions exist forever. That's how the Torah was created for all times. So therefore, again, just to summarize briefly, women are obligated in two out of the three parts of Talmud Torah. They're exempt from the Limadta Motzim es Benechem. A father is obligated only with respect to his minor son, a 12-year-old, less than 13-year-old son, once he's 13, is exempt. The source of Baruch Shem Tarani therefore becomes the Medrash Rabbah and the Chi of Talmud Torah, not the Morgan Avram's proud of being punished for your son's sins, not the Levush of your son being punished for your sins. This answers the Prima Gadam's questions about fathers and daughters and mothers and sons, etc. And as a result of this analysis, we can well explain the idea of Bar and Bas Mitzvah. And the Bar Mitzvah has two separate and distinct obligations. One of them applies to men as well as women, and one to men only. Thank you for listening. Oh yeah, questions, I promise questions. If you have a question, please speak up and speak very loud so everyone can hear. Please, ladies first. I'm still old fashioned, please. Stand up and speak loud. Very good question. That's an excellent question. I'll answer you. Oh, second question. Okay. That's correct. Let me explain the answer to both questions. Yes, the first question was, why is Benechem sometimes gender neutral and sometimes it's understood to be to the exclusion of the female gender? The answer is, all of this goes back to Har Sinai. Why the rabbi said, Benechem v'lo b'noseichem, and we don't find any such comparable drasha, as I mentioned myself, this is all based upon traditions from Sinai. As far as whether children are obligated in mitzvahs, they don't have their own obligation, yet an obligation of chinuch applies whether to them or to the father is a matter of dispute among the classical authorities. I'll take one question from a man, and then we'll have to stop, I'm afraid. Yes? Wow. Okay. I appreciate the questions. Before anything else, I would like to make one final comment. I see the next speaker, Harav Meir Goldovich Shalita, has entered. He deserves a round of applause for many reasons. And I asked Michila, I went over my time, I started a little late as well. But the main reason, aside from his tremendous accomplishment, I believe to some extent, this entire Kol Yom Rishon, Midreshet Yom Rishon, is the brainchild and the initiative of Rav Goldach. He deserves now another round of applause. Now to answer your question very briefly. Yes, they're two separate and distinct things. One is chinuch on a practical level. You should see to it that your child is hands-on. For example, in the Mishnah Yuma, the child fasts before Yom Kippur, both for men and for women, and when they turn 11 years old. That's practicality. And there are numerous other mitzvahs which matzah. You should give both your 11-year-old son and daughter matzah and let him drink the 4 cups of wine, etc. That's practical. Hashkafa means you shouldn't wait till 13 to your 12 to your son and daughter respected. Know about Avraham Avinu, know about Har Sinai, and know about Amunah, and know about being a mensch, and then Gemilas Chasadim. That's all. This is what a Jew is what I consider to be Hashkafa. But no Slavchad is a topic for a longer discussion. They were clearly Chachmoniyos, saying it's Rashi. They were very brilliant women. They've always been brilliant women in Am Yisrael. The issue we discussed today, as it's pointed out by the Torah Tamimah on that very pasuk of the Matam Asas Benechem, is only regarding the general education system. Women who are exceptional and wish to study more intensely on their own have our bracha as well. Thank you very much.